Hello and welcome to the Total Football Soccer Show, Richmond's first, only, and therefore best football talk show. I'm Taylor.
And I'm Daryl.
And this week on the show,
we'll talk Olympic soccer, the very existence of which may surprise some people.
We'll preview the upcoming World Cup qualifiers and discuss who's going to make it, who's in trouble, and who's preventing you from watching it this weekend.
We'll have a special ladies' edition of Seemingly Fake News, featuring a goalkeeper's wife, a blog, and an adult film actress.
Plus, we'll discuss the top five things we're most excited about for next year's World Cup in South Africa. Not surprisingly, England and the United States figure prominently.
And as usual, we'll close with a spelling bee, where I'll hope to continue my winning streak. This week's topic, World Cup winners. Last week, despite the involvement of Oprah Winfrey herself, the Olympic Games were not awarded to Chicago. Instead, the 2016 Olympics will be in Rio de Janeiro. Alongside the usual running and jumping and throwing things and swimming, there will be football, but not everybody seems to know that.
Yeah, it's really amazing to me because in every other athletic event there, it's like that's the pinnacle of sport. It's, you know, you're the best gymnast in the world or the best swimmer in the world. And yet, when it comes to Olympic football, you know, no one really seems to really take all that much notice.
That's true, and there are historical reasons why that's the case.
Yeah, Olympic soccer goes back to 1908, but really the big date is 1930, which was the first World Cup. And essentially FIFA wanted to create a disparity between the World Cup, which is supposed to be the best soccer tournament on earth, and the Olympics. So they made the Olympics amateur only, which is kind of interesting because if you grew up in the United States, you always heard that, you know, soccer was communist kickball. And the reason for that is basically because communist bloc athletes were state-sponsored, so they were technically amateur even if they were professional. Which is why I believe
it's like a loophole.
Yeah, basically between like 1948 and 1980, they won 23 of 27 medals. So communists were always really good. So it was amateur until 1984, and there have been some rule changes since. But the present system is that it can be any soccer player under the age of 23 plus three overage players.
I think part of the frustration with it for me is that it's still a little confusing.
Yeah.
As in, players will be called up for the tournament.
Yeah.
But their clubs won't let them go because the Olympics sort of overlaps with the start of the European domestic season.
And it's interesting to me how, you know, countries that are amazing in the World Cup that have these brilliant records. What, Brazil won like five World Cups?
Yeah.
And yet they've never won an Olympics, which, true, you know, says something about how much they value the tournament.
Well, actually, the weird thing is that they are one of the nations that seems to value it more, mostly because it's the one international tournament that Brazil has never won.
Yeah.
So Brazil have a big hole in their in their trophy cabinet, I guess.
Yeah.
And they're understandably keen to fill that hole with an Olympic medal.
As I said previously, it seems like the Olympics for every other athletic event are, you know, the end-all be-all of sport. And yet here with football, people don't really care that much. You know, obviously if the USA is competing, I'm going to root for them. But if they're not, I'm not going to fall the way I would the World Cup. So, you know, I'm wondering how exactly the Olympics can get soccer on that level where people around the world will actually care for it.
Well, part of the problem is that FIFA and Sepp Blatter, mm-hmm, don't necessarily want it at, yeah, that level, but they still want it to be involved because they want football to be part of the Olympic movement.
Mm-hmm.
But the big thing is the next two Olympic Games are 2012 is London, 2016 we now know is Rio de Janeiro.
Mm-hmm.
So it's two football crazy countries hosting the Olympic tournaments, which presents a chance for the spotlight to be back on Olympic football.
Yeah, that's kind of an ironic thing to say considering that Great Britain haven't entered a team since, I believe, like 1972.
Yeah, and there's good reasons for that. The problem is, and this has been a long-running argument, that the various nations that make up Great Britain, England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland.
The home nations, yeah.
The home nations all have their own football associations. Mm-hmm. So the decision was taken in the 70s to not form a British national team because it sort of undermines the autonomy, right, of the four various associations. And everyone was mostly content with that arrangement. But now that there's the London 2012 Games, mm-hmm, and football is part of that, the decision's been taken that we will enter a team into that tournament, mm-hmm, a great British team.
So does that mean you're going to have like a Welsh left back and like a Scottish centre mid? Or what exactly is the situation there?
That was my hope because I would love the novelty of a British national team with seeing how those players all mixed in. But the sort of the same old feelings were still there that the various individual FAs weren't keen to form a united team.
Right. So then I guess they like floated the idea of a playoff maybe?
Well, I think it was mostly a fan-driven idea. Mm. It was certainly an idea I was behind, but it was never seriously proposed, was to have a four-team playoff between the four teams.
And whoever wins goes to the
Yeah, whoever
the
wins gets to represent Great Britain, which I think would have been just fantastic. But instead, what happened was the Scottish, Welsh, Northern Irish FAs just said, we don't want anything to do with it. We'll just let an English team play under the flag of Great Britain. So I think that's what we're going to get.
So with all that said, do you see this being a more exciting Olympics in terms of football?
You mean in 2012?
Yes.
Yeah, well, at least it will have more interest. Mm-hmm. Definitely in England, probably in Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland as well. Mm-hmm. And then also 2016 in Brazil, if they haven't won it or even if they already have won it, there's going to be an interest in football because it's Brazil.
Right.
So this is a chance for Olympic football to reestablish itself, I think. Mm. But there are going to have to be some changes.
Right, and so FIFA are actually talking about changes, and essentially there's two big ones right now. The first one is that they kind of want to make the Olympics into an under-21 World Cup, which would be interesting to see, you know, youth players coming through, but it certainly wouldn't, you know, draw in attention the way the World Cup does.
Yeah, because under-21 is a lower standard than under-23, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. The other proposal is no age limit at all.
Right.
But then players who have already played in World Cups wouldn't be allowed to play in the Olympics.
Which I think would be really exciting because it would give you an opportunity to see players that, you know, aren't the big name players that you're used to. You'd get to see players that are maybe coming through the pipeline or are good but aren't generally utilized by their national team.
Yeah, and it would definitely be players that you haven't seen in a World Cup.
Yeah.
So even that, just to see them in an international tournament is exciting, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the only problem is that as with the current under-23 setup, clubs can still refuse to let their players go because mm-hmm. the Olympics overlaps with the start of the domestic European season. So until FIFA really puts its foot down and says to the clubs, this is a proper tournament, you must release the players. Mm-hmm. Until that happens, you're not going to see Olympic football be at the level that it should be.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Taylor.
And Daryl.
Here on Richmond Independent Radio 97.3.
And if you've got any feedback, email it to us at soccer@wrir.org.
It's the final round of World Cup qualifiers this coming week, and I believe there's 11 teams that are already qualified at this point.
Yeah, you have the host, South Africa, Japan, Australia, North Korea, South Korea, Netherlands, Brazil, Ghana, England, Spain, Paraguay.
And another team that could book their place at the World Cup is the United States. They play Honduras in Honduras, which was a bit of a shaky issue for a little while there. There was obviously a coup in Honduras. The United States national team didn't want to play there. FIFA kind of said you're going to anyway, and now they are.
So if the USA wins that game on Saturday, they're qualified for the World Cup.
Right. Unfortunately, if you live in the United States, you're probably not going to be seeing it.
Yeah, we're used to the US national team games being on ESPN2.
Right.
Not good enough for ESPN1, but at least it's easy to find on ESPN2.
Yeah.
This game is only available pay-per-view on Saturday. Not the pay-per-view that you can sit at home and pay for and watch, right, which is bad enough, but the pay-per-view where bars have to pay thousands of dollars to show the game. So it's not available to the general public, only in bars. And then the bars have to charge, I think, $10 to $15 mm-hmm. for them to make their money back for people to go and watch it. So right, mostly people aren't going to be watching this.
Yeah, it's definitely disappointing because obviously, you know, the qualifiers are the best way to build support for your team going to the World Cup.
Yeah, especially the moment they qualify. That's such a big moment.
Yeah, right. And instead, it's going to be people watching baseball or football because those sports are, you know, televised on easy to access channels. Obviously, here that won't be the case. And I guess what most people are going to ask is why?
Yeah, how has that situation come about?
Yeah.
I've noticed a lot of people seem a little angry at US soccer, as if it's them that mm-hmm. sold the rights to this pay-per-view channel. But what actually happens is, because the game is in Honduras, it's the Honduran Football Association that owns the rights and sells the rights. So
They really didn't want to sell it to ESPN, I guess?
Well, I assume this pay-per-view company offered them more money.
Yeah.
And they've got no interest in whether people in the USA are going to watch the game or not. They just want the money from the rights sales.
Yeah, I guess the situation could be worse. It could be the situation in England.
Yeah, this Saturday, England plays away to Ukraine. Mm-hmm. The game was originally going to be on Setanta Sports in the UK, but that folded.
Right.
And so the game was put up for bid again.
Right, and I think the issue is that it's almost like England have done too well. They're already qualified, and so it's not going to be as much of like a heated atmosphere and everyone wanting to know if they're going to make it or not. They're already through, so there's not going to be as much of a demand to watch them on television.
Yeah, and for that reason, the TV companies didn't put in right. significant bids, and they were outbid by an online company.
Right.
So for the first time ever, an England game will only be available to watch on the internet.
Yeah, how do you feel about that?
I'm a little frustrated. I grew up with England games. All England games were available on terrestrial TV, mm-hmm. on the BBC or the ITV. Then Sky Sports came along and suddenly it's on pay TV. But most people eventually had that, so it was sort of okay. Now we've got this situation where you pay money to watch it or you don't see it at all.
Okay, but my question is, do you think this is the future of televised games, that it's going to be you watch online because that's the easiest way to do it?
I don't think so. I've heard a few people suggest that this is not the beginning of a mm-hmm. revolution or something.
Yeah.
But what's really happened is that there's a game that the big TV companies didn't care about enough to put a decent bid in. Mm. And so it's almost like the internet company has picked it out of a bargain basement sort of thing.
Yeah, but I mean, it could always be worse. At least England are qualified. I think Argentina would probably trade spots with you in a heartbeat.
Yeah, poor Diego Maradona.
Yeah, well, you say that. I'm not too sympathetic for him. But yeah, they're definitely struggling. And, you know, right now they could very well have a hard time getting to World Cup.
Yeah, right now they're in fifth place in the South American qualifiers, which gets you a playoff against the CONCACAF teams.
Which is like Costa Rica at this moment?
At the moment, but yeah. Who knows? So Saturday they've got Peru, and Wednesday they're away to Uruguay. The interesting thing is that Uruguay are also in the hunt, so that game is going to be absolutely huge.
Yeah, I mean, right now, I guess in CONMEBOL, you have from the fourth place team to the eighth place team, they're only separated by 3 points, so it's pretty wide open in South America.
Yeah, it's all to play for. And I think Argentina are used to being already home, already qualified at this point, already on the plane.
Yeah, people are all talking about whether or not they're going to make it. I'm going to put money on the fact that they're going to be there. But my question for you is, do you think that this is going to affect it in any way? Do you think it's going to give them more drive to perform in the World Cup because so many people are doubting them, that they kind of have the people don't believe in us, people are making fun of us kind of momentum?
Well, I've sort of talked about this before. I think Maradona is going to be better in a tournament situation rather than over the sort of long haul of World Cup qualifying campaigns where you have to have difficult games at altitude and all that sort of business.
Plus, he'll be able to get all his cosmetic surgery, so he'll, like, you know, look nice for the World Cup, as opposed to right now, where he's kind of, you know, falling apart. So at least he'll have a surgery, and then hopefully he'll be able to coach them, if he's still their coach.
Yeah, even if they qualify, he's talked about maybe resigning, which would be interesting.
Yeah, there's another coach who may not be at the head of his country for much longer. That'd be Carlos Queiroz. He's the head coach of Portugal, and they're also in a bit of hot water at the moment.
Yeah, I'm just amazed that he's still got his job.
Yeah, I mean, he's got arguably the best player in the world in Cristiano Ronaldo. I don't really like him, but I'll admit he's pretty good. And then he's just got, you know, a wealth of talent, and yet they're still struggling behind, what, Denmark and Sweden? Is that what it is?
Yeah, they are. And Denmark and Sweden play each other this weekend, so it maybe gives Portugal a chance to jump over Sweden. But Portugal are going to be relying on other people's results to even make a playoff position. So, yeah, we could be looking at a World Cup without Cristiano Ronaldo unless they pull something out in the next week.
And I've made no secret of the fact that I'm not a big Ronaldo fan, but I will admit that a World Cup that could potentially be without Ronaldo and Messi is not that great of a World Cup. I think you need to have your biggest, brightest stars there to make it a tournament that isn't like the Olympics.
Well, that's something that I suspect will come up in our top five later on, so be sure to stay tuned for that.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Taylor.
And Daryl.
Here on WRAR 97.3, radio for the rest of us.
So now it's time for seemingly fake news, bits of football news that we've read in the last week that sounds like it's made up but is actually true. This week's theme is the ladies. Taylor, you want to start us off?
Yeah, this week the wife of Inter Milan goalkeeper Julio Cesar got him in a bit of trouble when on her blog she kind of intimated that if Inter Milan didn't treat him well, they were going to look elsewhere. She said, "It's clear that we have no intention of leaving Milan, but in football anything can happen. I hope that Inter realize the value of my husband and of how much he deserves so that he won't be tempted to play elsewhere." When you have big clubs like Manchester United kind of interested in your husband, probably not the best idea to anger his current team that way.
Yeah, that's crazy. What? She has a blog?
Yeah, apparently. You know, because everyone wants to know what the wife of Julio Cesar and the former girlfriend of Fat Ronaldo, you know, is thinking.
What's her name?
Her name is Susanna Werner, excuse me. So in case you were ever curious what Susanna Werner was thinking at any given time, I assume it's listed on her blog.
So is her blog like juliacesarswife.blogspot.com? Like, why does she have a blog?
Because everyone wants to know what wags are thinking. It's an important thing.
Wow. I hope this doesn't get him in too much trouble. Maybe I'll get him a big new contract and she'll be a hero.
Yeah, I feel like that's highly unlikely, but you never know.
So my bit of seemingly fake news involves French coach Raymond Domenech. Raymond is struggling a bit at the moment with France are in second in their group, so they're not doing as well as they should in World Cup qualifying. But he's been a hit in the pop charts.
Yeah, I heard about this.
There's a singer.
Singer? That's what you want to... You're going to give her credit for being a singer?
Okay, she's a former porn star.
There it is.
But she's currently a singer named Catherine Ringer, who's released a single called Je Kiffe Raymond, which I think translates as I Fancy Raymond. And it's full of sort of double entendre football lyrics about how she's attracted to Raymond Domenech. Would you like to hear a sample lyric?
I would, please.
"And if he attacked my penalty areas, I would be without defenders."
That sounds like the ramblings of a crazy person that have somehow found their way out of the French pop charts. What is it with him and how his love life somehow manages to find the spotlight over the fact that he doesn't appear to be that good of a manager?
Oh, you're talking about when he proposed to Estelle Denis during the Euro 2008 press conference?
Yeah, essentially, France had been eliminated from Euro 2008, and instead of, you know, explain what happened or, you know, console his team.
Or offering his resignation.
Yeah, exactly. He chose that moment to propose to his girlfriend on, you know, live global television.
Well, Monsieur Domenech has a sort of long history of crazy behind him. He's famously the manager who bases some of his team selection on astrology. I don't know if you know about that.
What?
Yeah, he famously doesn't trust Scorpios. So if you're a Scorpio, it's harder to get in the French national team. So French people might not be keen on Domenech keeping his job, but I'm really hoping he qualifies the World Cup, keeps his job, so that we can enjoy some more of Raymond Domenech's craziness.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Taylor
and Daryl
here on Richmond Independent Radio 97.3.
And if you've got any feedback, email it to us at soccer@wrir.org. All right, so it's time for the top five. This week, in honor of next summer's World Cup in South Africa, we're going to list our top five things we're looking forward to at World Cup 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Taylor, do you want to kick us off?
So my number five, as you previously mentioned, North Korea have qualified, and that means Kim Jong-il may be involved somehow in this tournament. And that fills me with glee that I can't even explain to you, because whether he's, you know, developing nuclear technologies or denouncing the West or forbidding his players from speaking to the media or even playing international friendlies, really, he's just kind of a nutball. And I really look forward to having him in the tournament next year.
And then the best thing is that South Korea are also there. So there's game to maybe look forward to.
Yeah, I cross fingers.
Okay, so my number five is the possible absence of Leo Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo.
That's a pretty big one.
We sort of alluded to this earlier. Most people are going to say that it's a bad thing that two of the best players in the world are missing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it is. But from where I'm sitting, football has become so focused on sort of global superstars mm-hmm. and everything they do that those two at the World Cup, the spotlight would have been so much on them. The big thing for me is, like, if you look at Euro 2008, there was so much focus on Cristiano Ronaldo and his possible move to Real Madrid.
Right.
It was just every day, and it got very annoying.
Mm-hmm.
So this time there's going to be none of that.
Yeah.
Also, if Messi and Ronaldo aren't there, then they can't disappoint.
Right.
I can remember World Cup 2006, all the pre-tournament hype was about Ronaldinho.
Right.
Who then didn't really do anything when he was there.
Well, he did stand around and do nothing. So
exactly,
that's something, though.
And it was so disappointing to see this guy do that. So at least we can imagine what they would have been like if they were there.
Right.
If they're not there.
Gotcha. All right, well, my number four is basically that I have two teams to support. Obviously, I'm American. I'm always going to support the U.S. national team. But, you know, I'm also a fan of the English Premier League. I root for a club in England, and, you know, I'm English in origin. So, so I've kind of adopted the English national team as my second team. Maybe that's because they're probably going to go further than the United States. I don't know. But I will say that so it's exciting for me that, you know, England are already in. They look much stronger than they did, you know, at least in the Euro qualifying. So I'll say I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I've got the same thing as well. Obviously, I'm an England fan, but I've been here for about 4 years now, and I've very much adopted the US as my second team. So we're both kind of lucky in it. Rather than just having one team to support like everybody else, we've got double the chance of success, but also double the chance of failure,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, let's hope not, but probably.
So my number four is sort of a counterbalance to the Messi-Ronaldo thing is Diego Maradona.
Oh,
if Argentina make it, I'm looking forward to seeing what he does. A bit like Kim Jong-il, he could just do something wacky and crazy.
Yeah.
But I've got a sneaking feeling that it's going to be like a redemption for him. And that what I was getting at earlier, the fact that it's a month-long tournament and all very intense, I think he's better in a crazy pressure cooker situation like that rather than a long drawn out affair. And I feel like there's a story there that could happen of Maradona redeeming himself at the World Cup.
My number three is how the United States will fare in this tournament.
Okay.
I'm actually more excited about the fact that there don't appear to be real expectations for this team. You know, you go back to France 98, no one really knew anything about them and they were terrible. So that in 2002, no one expected much of them. They played really well. And then in 2006, they had high expectations. They played terrible. And now it's kind of all over the place. You know, are they good? Are they not? You don't really know. You can't trust the FIFA rankings. And so they've performed well at times and poorly at times. And I'm interested to see how they actually fare in this tournament.
Yeah, it's kind of realistic expectations, I suppose.
Yeah.
And are you one of the people who are happy that Bob Bradley's going to be coaching there or not?
You know, I don't really care if Bob Bradley's managing. My thing that I'm concerned about is how the United States responds. You know, they played really well in the Confederations Cup. And hopefully that doesn't go to their heads. But this is their opportunity to really, on a world stage, you know, not win it. I know that's really unlikely. It's probably not going to happen. But also not to get eliminated immediately. It's their chance to say, we can be a consistently good team and consistently perform. And it's a chance for, you know, some of our bigger name players to maybe get to bigger name teams.
We talking Landon Donovan here?
No, I don't consider him ever going to Europe ever again.
So my number three is also about looking forward to my national team.
Yeah.
This is the first England team that I've been really proud of since, I'd say, 1996.
Really?
Yeah, going into every tournament, I've had my doubts, been a little reserved. This team, I love how it's put together. I love that it's picked on form and as a unit rather than just on who's the most famous.
Mm-hmm.
So going into World Cup 2006, they were just horrible to watch. Just an ugly team, the way they played.
But they're the golden generation, Darryl.
Exactly. So I'm not saying England's going to win it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even predicting that they'll go to the final or anything like that. But I'm just saying whatever happens, this is a team for the first time in a long time that I believe in and that I'm proud of. And I'm looking forward to supporting them.
Now, it looks increasingly likely that David Beckham will feature in this World Cup. So my question for you is, how do you feel about that? Do you think it's going to have an impact on the English team?
Maybe not so much on the field. He's not going to start. Mm-hmm. There's no way he's going to start. It's going to be Theo Walcott or Aaron Lennon on the right. I think Beckham's useful to have coming off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Some set pieces, that kind of thing. So I'm happy if he's there. I'm not happy if he starts, put it that way.
All right, well, fair enough. We're listing our top five things we're most excited about becoming World Cup in South Africa. So my number two is who the dark horse is going to be. Basically, in every World Cup, there's at least one dark horse. Going back to like 1998 in France, it was Croatia. In 2002, you could say it was USA. You could say it was Turkey. You could say it was Korea. And then in the last World Cup, you could say it was Australia. And it's really kind of wide open as to who it's going to be. My
Especially
money,
because only 11 teams have qualified.
Yeah, well, there you go. But looking at the teams that will most likely qualify, I'm going to throw this out. I'm going to say my dark horse, even though they're number one in their qualification group, is Serbia.
Oh, okay, yeah, so I speak.
That might be because I'm afraid of Nemanja Vidic, their center back, but I'm still sticking with Serbia.
The interesting thing for me is the team that turns out to be the dark horse is never the team that's predicted to be the dark horse.
Yeah, thank you.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I remember in 94, everybody's dark horse was Colombia.
Yeah.
But they had Valderrama and Asprilla, and everyone was saying, oh, yeah, Colombia's the dark horse, Colombia's the dark horse.
And then USA beat them.
Yeah, they went out in the group stage. And the dark horse in 94 turned out to be Bulgaria. So I guess my point is that when you pick a dark horse before the tournament, they're no longer a dark horse because everybody's picking them. So you don't know who it's going to be until we're halfway through, and that's why it's exciting.
So you don't want to venture a guess? Come on, venture a guess.
I'll guess that the dark horse won't be someone who's picked before the tournament.
Clever. Yeah. Well played.
Oh, it's still me. Okay. My number two is the African teams.
Mm-hmm.
There are going to be six African teams at this tournament. There's South Africa, the hosts. Ghana have already qualified.
Mm.
Cote d'Ivoire are all but there.
Mm-hmm.
Four others, we're not sure.
Yeah.
But what I do know is that because this is the first World Cup on African soil, this is, I think, going to be the World Cup where African teams go further than the quarterfinals, which is as far as they've gone before.
Like home team advantage kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even though, say, Ghana is a different country to South Africa, there's something about the tournament being in Africa. It's surely going to just provide that extra bit of motivation, extra bit of lift.
Mm-hmm.
That should just make it really exciting to watch the African teams at the World Cup 2010.
Yeah, most definitely. And going off that, my number one is simply that the World Cup is in Africa, and specifically in South Africa.
Okay.
There's still a lot of stigma and, you could say, prejudice about South Africa. I mean, I'm going to be a nerd here, but you have District 9 that just came out, which is essentially an allegory about apartheid South Africa.
Okay.
You know, it's still on people's minds. And so I think that this is, a major opportunity for people to see Africa as more than a third world continent. You could see South Africa as this country that, it's hosting this major tournament. It's inviting all these people in. And if it goes smoothly, who knows what the future holds?
Yeah, and the great thing is going to be the just being able to laugh at all the people who sort of predicted it would go horribly. Because there's still people out there who say it shouldn't be in South Africa and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to seeing them proved wrong, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, you got to remember the fact that a year ago people were like, it might still be in the USA or Germany because it just looked like they were so behind schedule. And now, I've seen some of the photos of the stadia. They look amazing. And I think the venues are going to work out well. I think all the issues that people were really kind of hyping aren't going to be issues. And I'm really excited about the overall tournament.
Great. My number one thing that I'm looking forward to about the World Cup being in South Africa is the weather.
Ooh, okay.
So June and July in South Africa is the winter.
Right.
Right. So that doesn't mean ice or snow. That means a nice temperate, like 63 degrees Fahrenheit.
Is there any way you're looking forward to this because you're an England fan?
Well, no, there is that because it suits England better, right? Yeah. But previous World Cups always, or almost always, in the Northern Hemisphere and in the summer.
Right.
And it's hot. So yeah. The games are sort of slow and the players are tired. I can remember USA 94, because England didn't qualify, I was supporting Ireland.
Yeah.
And they played in Florida in July.
Yikes.
And it was just horrendous.
No one should ever go to Florida.
To play football in July, no.
Just in general, but that's fine. Football in July is fine.
So what I'm looking forward to is that the weather in South Africa in June, July should lend itself to like a high-tempo, exciting football that we don't normally see at World Cups.
Mm-hmm. Are you looking forward to the Vuvuzelas?
I'm not looking forward to the people complaining about the Vuvuzelas.
Yeah, for those who don't know, the Vuvuzelas are basically, they're like a traditional South African instrument from what I've read, but it's basically they're plastic air horns that you play or that you hear at, you know, any American sporting event that make that really grating noise. And when they're played by 20,000 South African fans, it gets kind of annoying.
It does, yeah. And all this, there's so much talk of like ban the Vuvuzela and it shouldn't happen. It's just kind of ridiculous. I mean, it might be annoying, but it's not making your ears fall off, right? So unless there's an actual risk of your ears bleeding, then there's no reason that the Vuvuzela should be banned. So I'm definitely not looking forward to all the complaining about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Vuvuzela or no, the World Cup's coming, so be prepared and get excited, just as Daryl and I were. And if you have your own list of top five things that you're most excited about this coming World Cup, then please feel free to send it to us at soccer@wrar.org. All right, so now it's time for the spelling bee. Daryl's currently leading 4-3,
which
hurts me deep inside. And this week we'll be spelling World Cup winners.
Okay.
Daryl, you want to start us off?
Yep. Taylor, I'm going to ask you to spell 1990 World Cup winner with West Germany, Klaus Augenthaler.
Klaus Augenthaler. All right, K-L-A-U-S.
Yes.
A-U-G-E-N. T-H-E-I-L-E-R.
Oh, very close again.
Oh, my God, every week.
It was K-L-A-U-S, A-U-G-E-N-T-H-A-L-E-R.
Again with the H. Always the H. So I've missed again. We'll see if Daryl... Yeah, thank you. I'm sure you do. All right, so I guess now we'll see if Daryl can further his lead. Daryl, I would like...
Can't go behind.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for just rubbing salt in there. I would like for you to spell... 1998 World Cup winner with France, Yuri Zhurkaev.
Oh, I know the player, but I'm never sure of the spelling.
Yeah, it's tricky.
I actually know the surname, but I'm struggling with the first. Okay, enough talking, I'll get to it.
All right.
Yuri, I'm going to guess Y-O-U-R-I.
That is correct.
Okay, Zhurkaev, D-J-O-R-K-A-E-F-F. A-E-F-F.
That is correct. Well done. Well done, Daryl. Daryl now furthers the lead. It's 5-3, and I got to find some way to get back into this one as Daryl does the most awkward dance in the history of dance. Well played, sir. Well played. And on that note, we come to the end of the show, and as always, we like to close with a quote. So, Daryl, I believe you got one for us?
Yeah, in the wise words of singer, adult film actress, and Raymond Dominic aficionado, Catherine Ringer, "And if he attacked my penalty areas, I would be without defenders."